This is one of those Sundays I feel like giving you a gift this morning. Is that okay? So when you hear that, your level of expectation rises just a little bit, right? You remember back in the day when Oprah would give gifts to the studio audience? You remember that? I think one time she gave them all a car. I'm not giving you a car. Now your expectation lowered just a little bit, right? What I'm going to give you today, and I said it's unexpected. It might not even be something that you think you need. But I want to give you a model for expectations of the people that are around you. Think about that for just a moment. I want to give you a model for handling the expectations that you have of the people around you. Because the reality is, we have expectations of everyone. Everyone. We have expectations on our family, every member of them. We have expectations of our circle of friends. When you go to work, you're going to have expectations of the employees that are around you, your boss. And so we all have them. And it's our expectations when they do not get met that we experience some of the greatest emotions of our lives. We feel some of the deepest, most hurt when people disappoint us. They don't live up to our expectations. We experience things like disappointment. I'm sure that if you have lived long enough and we've let all the young kids go, you have experienced disappointment in your life at some level. And it hurts us in a deep spot, right? When we have a level of expectation on somebody and they don't meet that expectation, it can hurt us in a deep place. We have deep disappointment and we have frustration. Any of you ever been frustrated? Some of you have been frustrated and you don't even know why. And you're like, everybody just makes me frustrated. I just want out of humanity. And believe it or not, many times you can trace your levels of frustration back to an expectation that you have of people that they're not meeting. That's why I think it's so important that as Christians we have a model for this. So I've got two things for you today. One is a story in 2 Kings chapter 5 of a man named Naaman. So I'd love for you to turn to 2 Kings chapter 5, either in your Bible, your device. And then I want to tell you about this man named Pete Scazzaro that I found sometime back. And he said that you need four things for a good expectation. And it was such a good gift for me because it helped me to understand how to relate to people. And I'm going to pass that along to you today because it's been so good to me. And it has helped me, it's helped my family, it's helped my ministry so much that today I want to give that model to you as a gift. So I've got an illustration and a model that I want to give you. So let's begin with the illustration. That's in 2 Kings chapter 5. In verse 1, it says, "Now Naaman, the captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. And the man was also a valiant warrior. But he was a leper." Now, I'm going to sort of paraphrase for you what happens next. So here is this great warrior, Naaman, but he has leprosy. And leprosy is one of those things in the day, it's incurable. It's also untreatable. You can't treat the symptoms. You can't treat the pain of it. When you have leprosy, it's final. And so that's what he has. And he has this young girl who has been taken captive, and she becomes a slave girl to him and to his household. She hears about this leprosy. She knows about it, and she remembers back to Israel because that's where she came from. She's like, if my master could just get back to Israel, back to Samaria, there's a prophet down there that could hear him. Now, she says that to Naaman's wife, and Naaman's wife goes and tells that to Naaman. And Naaman says, man, that'd be great. So Naaman goes and says that to his king of Aram. And the king of Aram says, I think that's great. I'm going to write a letter to the king of Israel. Do you see how this is going? This is like the one chain after another. So the king writes a letter to the king of Israel. They've had this tenuous peace agreement after battling with one another. So when the king of Israel gets this, he goes, oh man, this king's setting me up. And then he starts talking, and somebody in the court hears the king talking and goes and tells the prophet Elisha, and he says, man, the king's in bad shape. He thinks that the other king's trying to stir trouble up with him. Got this soldier named Naaman's got leprosy. And so then Elisha comes back to the king of Israel. Are you still with me at this point? You know how gossip happens, right? And how things get started. I find it absolutely amazing that Elisha gets back to the king and anything good comes out of this story. You know? Because most of the time, nothing good comes out of our gossiping and our talking, right? But somehow, Elisha gets back to the king, and in verse 8, he says, now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. I can just picture Elisha looking at the king saying, king, keep your seat. I got this. He's going to know that there's a prophet in Israel and that there's a God of Israel. And so Naaman is sent for in verse 9. It says, so Naaman came with his horses and his chariots, and he stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be clean. But Naaman was furious. And he went away and he said, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord as God and wave his hands over this place and cure the leper. And are not the Abinah and Parpha, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? And so he turned and he went away, it says, in a rage. And then in verse 13, then the servants came near and spoke to him and said, my father, had the prophet told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says for you to wash and be clean? And so he went down, he dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was made clean. So that's the illustration that we have. And to move into this model that was given by this Pastor Pete Scazzaro, which I think is absolutely brilliant. There are 4 things that you need to have a legitimate expectation of the people around you. You got to have 4 things. And the first one is you have to be conscious of the fact that you have an expectation. Many times we're walking around expecting so much from everybody, and we don't realize that we have that expectation. So I want to ask you, what are your expectations of your spouse, of your children, of your parents, of the people that you work with? You see, Naaman, he had these expectations and he didn't even realize it until he becomes absolutely furious. He goes into a rage. And I will tell you that that's one of the signs that your expectations, you're not conscious of them, is when you go into a rage, when you get angry. Because do you realize that anger is a secondary emotion? Do a little psychology for a moment. You don't just instantly go to anger. Did you know that? Now, some of you may have done it for so long that you can go in a split second. Right? You got a lot of practice just going there in a hurry. But it's a secondary emotion. You don't go there right away. Something caused you to go there. And in Naaman's case, he was dissed. Do we still use that? He's dishonored. I'm the great king's captain of his army. Who is this prophet that doesn't even come out to me and do anything for me? He's dishonored and he's disappointed. And I will tell you that for many of us, it's when we get frustrated, when we get angry at other people, that what God is trying to tell us is you have an expectation and that expectation has not been met. And that's the source of your anger. So one, you've got to be conscious of the fact that you have expectations of everybody around you. In fact, look around you right now. You even have expectations of the people around you. You have people, you have expectations of the church that you attend. You have expectations of everybody at work. You have expectations of people that you will meet today and you don't even know their name. Right? So it's important. Step number one, we have to know that we are this walking mix of expectations on every person that breathes around us. And then once you realize that you have an expectation, you have to put it into language. You got to say it. For a couple of reasons. One, you just need to hear yourself say your expectation out loud. Do you notice what happens when Naaman says his expectation? Listen to what he says. He flies into a rage and he says, "Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and he would stand, he'd call on the name of the Lord and he'd wave his hands." I love that part. Can't you see it? What's his expectation? "I thought surely he'd come outside and he'd wave his hands like a great prophet. Whew. And I'd be cured." He didn't do any of that. I can't believe he didn't do any of that. And it's like as soon as the prophet says it, and as soon as sometimes we say it, we go, "Oh my goodness. That's incredibly embarrassing that I even had that expectation. That's incredibly embarrassing." So we need to say it, and we have to say it out loud. One, so we hear ourselves, and a lot of times right there we go, "Ooh, you know what? That's pretty foolish. I'm going to just keep that to myself." But we also have to say it out loud because the people around us, they need to hear it as well. It's amazing how we can become so self-absorbed with our lives that we think that people are supposed to read our minds. We're so self-absorbed with what we want and what we think we need that we actually put people under this incredible burden of them having to try to read our minds. I remember hearing someone say, "Well, they ought to just know." None of us have ever used that, right? They should have just known. Our kids, they should have just known we wanted them to do such and such. My spouse should have just known. And the reality is, no, they don't necessarily know unless you tell them. Because the funny thing about expectations is everybody's got them, and a lot of times they're opposing. When you go to work, there are some people, and they're going to want you at their every beck and call. You know them, right? And then there are those who's like, "I got this, leave me alone. You know, don't micromanage me." And we're dealing with all of those. And so there's multiple expectations of everybody. I'll just take, because, you know, my examples are as a pastor. That's what I've got. And there are some people there. I understand that there are people, their expectation is, "Look, I'm just trying to figure out if I want to be here. And if I like the church and all, I don't really want to, you know, I don't want you coming around, you know, so much. Just, I'll let you know when I need you, you know, but you just keep your distance right now, okay?" And then there are others, they're like, "Can I have your phone number and can I call you every night?" About things, yeah? I remember one time a young man got drunk and he called me up and he said, "I need you. It's an emergency." I said, "It's 11:30 at night. What could be an emergency?" You know, I'm like, "You being drunk's not an emergency." And he's like, "Look, you're my pastor. If I need you to wipe my hind end, then when I call you, you need to come." Yeah, that's what I said too. I said, "Yeah, I'm glad you said that out loud because we need to clarify that expectation." I'm glad you said it out loud because now we know where we stand. And now we can clarify some things. So a lot of times we just think people ought to know. But the problem is they don't know until we tell them because everybody's competing for what we need from each other. And so we got to say it. So we got to know that we have them and we've got to say them. We got to say them to ourselves. We got to say them to the person that it matters to. And then that expectation has to be reasonable. Some of our expectations simply are not reasonable, right? Once you say them out loud, and you realize that when I look at Naaman's life and I'm looking at his expectations, they're not all that difficult. They seem reasonable. The only thing is they're incredibly vain and arrogant, which is like some of our expectations. It's incredibly arrogant of us to ask some of the things that we do of each other. And so Naaman is really expecting from the prophet what he gets from everybody else. You see what happens in verse 1? He's the captain of the army. He's a valiant warrior. And everybody loves him and respects him. And he's highly exalted in the land. But then he goes into another land. And he thinks that everybody's going to treat him there like he was treated in his home country. And it doesn't happen. And so it's unreasonable. And I bring that up to say this, that a lot of times our expectations of people are based on the last people that we encountered. Meaning that, can we just get real for a minute? When you were young and you were dating around and you were just having fun with all kind of people, right? Then one day you decide it's time to settle down and get married. You almost always judge the person you're married by the best qualities you found in each of the different people that you were dating and hanging out with. Does that make sense? And so that person, unfortunately, has the expectation of the greatest of the sum total of everybody that you dated. Woo, that's unreasonable. Can I just say that? That some of us have walked into a marriage relationship and it's absolutely unreasonable because you want your spouse to be the smartest. You want them to be a superstar model. You want them to be the best and the greatest of everything. And it's simply unreasonable. Some of you go into work and you expect your boss to treat you like your last boss treated you. That was really good. But the reality is those are two different people that manage in two different ways. And you can't expect the people in front of your face to treat you like the people that treated you in the past. And so oftentimes our expectations are not reasonable because we're basing on the best of what we've seen in everybody around us. So what happens when you have that conversation and you say, this is my expectation? And you find out that that expectation cannot be met. When you find out that it cannot be met, then you have to move it into a different file. You have to move it into a file called hope. Does that make sense? I move it from you have to be this way for me over to this file that says I hope at some point we could get there, but we might not. And so I'm going to maintain relationship regardless. Sometimes our expectations are completely unreasonable. And then you have to get an agreement that the person you're talking to has to agree that they can carry this thing out. If you don't get to agreement, you still do not have a legitimate expectation, which means you've told them what you want. They look at you and say, that sounds reasonable. I can handle that. I can do that. Then you got a valid expectation. Sometimes they'll just look at you and go, are you crazy? Really? That's what you expect? Absolutely not. So we occasionally run into situations where it's not reasonable, or the person who looks back at us says, no, I'm not doing it. Some of you say, nope, I'm not that kind of woman. You say, nope, I'm not that kind of man. You didn't marry that guy. And what you have to do then is move over into a place of hope. I've heard it described this way. If you know people in your life and they've been addicted and they're not going to celebrate recovery where they can get free, then when you get together on Christmas, don't be surprised if they show up drunk. You know? Or don't be surprised if they're addicted that they show up all the time wanting to borrow money from you. Right? Because they haven't done anything to change. So it's unreasonable to think that they're going to act any differently than they've been acting. So what you have to do then to have a relationship is move them over into this category that says, I understand that they're probably not going to be any different this Christmas. They're probably not going to be any different this Thanksgiving. They're probably not going to be any different when they come home this day. But I hope for a better day. And it puts you in a spot to where it sort of untangles you from the expectations that you have on people. And so I'll tell you a story about Brantley and me. We had this little boy named Caden. Brantley was going to stay home with this little baby. And I did not have this model for expectations, and neither did Brantley. So in our minds, here's what's going on. Brantley's keeping Caden all day, and I'm going to work. And Brantley's sitting there thinking, if I can just make it until Kevin gets home, then I'm going to hand Caden to Kevin, and I'm going to get a break. Now, Kevin was working hard and doing his thing. His mind was kind of exhausted. And Kevin's thinking, I'm going to get home and I'll get some dinner that Brantley's cooked. And I'll have a, yeah, I know, right? She spoiled me when we were young. She spoiled me. I thought that was going to carry over when we had kids. That was so unreasonable. And not agreed to. And I was thinking, I'm going to get home and I'm going to rest for a little bit. I'm going to kind of chill out. And then, you know, I'll get Caden and me and him will play and we'll have some fun. So now the problem that exists is she's just waiting for me. In fact, we talked about it this morning because I said, honey, sometimes when I tell stories, you act like I tell them differently than they really happen. I want to make sure we're on the same page today. She said, oh, no. She said, I was just thinking I'm making up any excuse. I got to go to Walmart. I got to go to the grocery store. Mind you, she's not cooking, so I don't know why she's going to the grocery store. But we both think that we're going to get some time when I get home. And it was a problem. It was a problem. Until we realized, wait a minute, she's expecting me to give her a break. And I'm expecting her to keep giving me a break. And we talked about it. And then we're like, oh. And I'm like, I see it. She's been there all day. She needs a break. And she said, oh, I see it. Sometimes he comes home and he's exhausted. He needs a few more minutes. And what did we have to do? We had to come to this kind of conclusion that when we met each other at the door, it's like, which one of us needs a break the most? He's yours. I got him. And we moved back and forth. But I tell you, that day, it settled it. Why? Because we realized that we had an expectation of each other. But that didn't matter until we actually told each other. Then we had to come to some kind of arrangement that was reasonable for both of us and agreed upon. And once we did that, it was never really an issue much at all after that. And so I tell you that to say, I would love for you. This is not the kind of message that you can really come down to the altar and fix as much as you can come down and realize that you need to fix it. But you're going to have to go away. You're really going to have to think about all your relationships and ask yourself, God, am I holding expectations that I've not handled in the right way, and then begin to move through that process? Now, I don't want to stop there because there's also something that happens that's incredibly damaging to us spiritually. And it's when we have expectations that are unmet from God. Anybody ever had an unmet expectation from God? Those are some of the most painful kind, right? You thought He was going to do something. You thought He was going to do it a particular way. And it didn't go down like that. And you become disappointed. And you become frustrated. And I just want to go ahead and tell you that if you're a believer, old or young, God is not obligated to your expectations. He lives on a higher plane. And so he's not bound by our expectations of Him. And oftentimes our expectations are not reasonable of God, and they're just flat out wrong. And He's under no obligation to meet our expectations. In fact, those four things that I give you, please promise me you won't try those on God. You hear me? Don't try them on God. Which says, I got it. So I'm going home and I'm going to try this on my people, and I'm going to work on my relationships with others. And God, I need to walk through a process that Kevin gave to me today. Lord, I have some expectations of You. Some things that I think You need to do in my body physically, and in my family, in my circumstances. I've got some expectations, God, and I realize that I have them. I'm conscious of them. And Lord, I need You to know. So I just want to be honest, and I just want to communicate those to You. And I've looked them over, and God, I think they're incredibly reasonable. And all I need You to do, God, is just sign off on them. Please don't invite me to that conversation between You and God. Because all I'm going to do is just sit over there and go, no, no, don't. God does not operate like that. He almost never does it the way we expect. Would that seem accurate to how you experience it? Because we don't see everything, do we? we don't understand everything. If you look at the story of Naaman, Naaman comes to the prophet Elisha because he thinks he's a leper. Actually, he thinks he's a great warrior who just happens to be a leper. But what Elisha knows that has come from God is, this guy is a leper who happens to be a warrior, but he has a greater issue. His issue is pride. And that one's eating at him and he doesn't even know. All he sees is the leprosy that's eating at his skin. He does not see the pride that is eating at his soul. So we're going to do what? What does God always do? God resists the proud. He gives grace to the humble. He walks him through the process of humility, which he will have to walk all of us through. Watch how it happens with Naaman. Naaman comes from the great country of Aram, and he has to go to the country that he defeated of Israel. He asked permission of the great king of Aram, but he has to get permission from the lesser king of Israel. He comes from maybe a palace, and he has to go to the house of a prophet who most everyone assumes is no palace. In fact, it might have been a one-room little place, which is all the more offensive if you're the great warrior Naaman, when the messenger comes out and says, I'm sorry, the prophet can't come out. Naaman's like, dude, it's a one-room house. I can see him behind you. He doesn't look busy to me. You know? He can't even talk to the prophet. A messenger comes out. And the messenger tells him to go and wash in what he thinks is the River Jordan. He thinks that's a dirty old place. Kind of like going to the clear waters of the Bahamas and then coming back to America and you're going, this water's dirty. He goes, what? He wants me to go wash 7 times in that old nasty river? And then, of course, the part that I love so much, I surely thought he was going to wave his hands over me. You know, whoof, whoo, boom, bam, be healed. You see how foolish this is? He's being humiliated at every level. And surely he'll heal me instantly on the spot. Surely when you ask God to do something, when do you want it? Right now. Surely he'll do it as soon as he waves his hand and waves hocus pocus over me. But no, wait, what? I got to go do what? 7 times? I got to wash 7 times. And he's furious. Because you see, he thinks he's a leper. But the thing that's really eating at him is not the leprosy, it's his pride. And he almost misses the work of God. And so I want to tell you that in your expectations, if you're not careful, you will miss the will of God, the ways of God, and even the miracles of God. All because of our expectations. So if you look at what he does, he had these expectations of how this thing was going to happen. And when it didn't go down the way he thought it was going to go down, he gets mad and he wants to leave. Is there anybody in the room that you had it planned out of how you thought God was going to intervene in your situation? And then when he didn't, one of the hardest things is to keep from getting an offense against God. Our heart becomes offended by God. He didn't do it the way that I was sure he was going to do it. Can I tell you that when you pray and you ask God to do something, you shouldn't have a necessary expectation. You ought to just lay that thing out there and say, God, I think I got some expectations, but I need to lay them down too. I need to lay down my expectations too and let you be God. Because you might have something that I don't know about. You see, the thing that Naaman didn't know about is pride was what was eating him. And God had prescribed the exact thing that was going to cure him of his pride. And so he had these expectations that caused him almost to miss his miracle. And his pride almost caused him to miss his miracle because he thought, wait a minute, you asking me to do what? Do you know who I am? How many times is it that God wants to do something and he comes in the weirdest ways, doesn't he? He sends somebody to give you a word, and it's a good word. But those people are not on par with you spiritually. Who do they think they are telling me what to do? Giving me something from God. I hear God for myself. Wait a minute, God, what do you want me to do? Oh, no, uh-uh. And we will not move with God because we think whatever it is that God is prescribing is beneath us. And we miss a miracle because of our pride. And then he came, and I didn't read these portions, but when he came, we did read the part that he came with horses and chariots. Can you see him pulling up in his horses and his chariots? To the prophet who could care less about his horses and chariots. You see, the nation of Israel didn't even have horses and chariots. They were forbidden. Because God said, I don't want you to put your trust in horses and chariots. I'm your God. I'm where your strength comes from. So here is the captain of the army pulling up in his horses and chariots to the prophet in the nation that has no horses and chariots. And he's got gold and he's got silver and he's got 10 changes of clothes. Now for some of you women, they're like, 10 changes of clothes? That's not nearly enough. Right? Some of y'all take more than 10 changes of clothes for an overnight trip. But back then, if you only have one change of clothes, your whole life, so to speak, 10 changes of clothes. Wow. Why does he pull up with all those things? Because in his world, you earn everything. And so you come and you buy what you need. Can I just tell you that you cannot earn the grace of God? We just need a reminder of that, right? You cannot earn the grace of God. He is not impressed by our lifestyle. He's not impressed by what we bring. He sees us for who we are, and he says, you don't have to bring all that stuff. I'd like to give you guys an invitation today. For some of you, you didn't think you could come to God because you didn't think you had horses and chariots. You didn't have gold and silver. You didn't have 10 changes of clothes. And I will tell you that Naaman didn't have to come with any of those things. God wasn't impressed by him. He just needed to come as a leper. He needed to come in need to a God that could heal him. And I will say to anybody in the room, you don't have to come with all that stuff. You just come with your need. And as you humble yourself, God humbles us so that he might exalt us in due time. And so when Naaman went and washed in that water 7 times, and he was healed, he comes back, and he's so excited. I will tell you this. When you're praying for that miracle for your body, when you're praying for that miracle in relationships, when you're wanting God to do something, here's what you need to do. It's our greatest obstacle sometimes. I believe it is Andrew Murray. He taught and wrote on prayer so much. He said, one of the hardest things, but you must do it when you enter into prayer, is to release yourself from the expectations of how God has to do it. You have to release your expectations of how you want God to do it. Because I'll tell you this, can I remind you that God is good? Can I remind you that God is faithful? Can I remind you that God is madly in love with you? Can I remind you that he'll stop at nothing to make sure that you are in the best of care? He sent his son to die. Will he not also give you all things that you need? And so when we go to God, we have to go not with our expectations, but with a reminder of who he is. I set aside my expectations, but I come with this knowledge of who God is. And I said, God, this is what I need. This is what I believe that I need most. Do it however you need to do it. And then watch. Because he'll use muddy water. He'll use some of the most unexpected things to do exceedingly abundantly beyond what you could ask or imagine.